Hello, everyone. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. Oh, it's almost New Year's, and we've got a very exciting Paradigm Shifter with us today. Because New Year's, a time of what we call resolutions, is truly a time where we're aiming deep in our hearts and souls for paradigm shifting. Sometimes we feel a bit blunted. We feel defeated by our own weaknesses and so on. So I know that Ty Kane, creator of the Future Visioning Process, is going to help you and I launch a much broader sense of who we are in the future. So Ty has a lot of experience with future visioning. Welcome to the show, Ty.
Well, thank you so much, Veronica. I'm very happy to be here. And particularly at this time, as you say, it's headed to New Year's. And it is a time of newness that, as you also said, is often a confrontation for people. So this is a way to step into a bigger, brighter future, and we'll have lots of fun with that, because you and I have already had fun talking yesterday for hours.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time talking, but I want to tell people that one of the things that happened with me as we were talking about future vision is I kind of popped free from something. I don't have to assess what exactly it was. So we're going to get Ty to tell us what future visioning is, where it came from, who on earth he is in the first place, or we should never stay the same. So who he was when he started all this.
And who he's becoming.
Yeah. And
this is the most important part.
And where is the choosing factor? We'll put that in as well. Because I know that you've already made a huge difference with a lot of people. And some of what we said over the last few days has made a huge difference to one of my clients already. So that's even without my knowing very much. So welcome to the show, Ty. And who are you? How did you get into this thing? Are you from an other planet?
Totally. We all are.
Oh, good. I like that.
In front of a big group one day, I was speaking to a large audience, and I said, okay, is there anybody in here who's just a human being? And nobody raised their hand, because it's funny. Some of the stuff that I talk about is a little controversial and challenging, but the core quote that's so wonderful from Teilhard de Chardin, who said, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
I love that. But also, Teilhard de Chardin was a huge paradigm shifter in his day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he didn't have all the media so he could pry it free 100 miles an hour, but still.
But a lot of what he did has lasted, like that idea. And everybody at some level gets that they're not a human being. We're spiritual beings playing human. And that's what the whole future visioning is about, is imagining a future where you become your full, magnificent, empowered spiritual self.
Great. Well, so tell us how you got into this. You started off as a hypnotherapist. I know you started off as a person, right?
And went. No, I started off as a child.
As a child. Yeah, that we do that, don't we?
Yeah, almost everyone I know does that. So I was born and raised in Utah, surrounded by Mormons, and that just didn't fit. My dad's family was big-time Mormon. My mom was not. She was from San Francisco. And religion just never sat right with me. So I just slammed the door on religion, spirituality. I liked my playing and enjoying and motorcycles and water skiing and that kind of thing. And then in 1974, after I dropped out of college several times with a good friend to go to Aspen to be a ski bum, he wrote me from Alaska, and he was studying grizzly bears in Alaska. And he wrote me and he said, I'm going to Nepal to work with National Geographic on a Bengal tiger study.
Woo.
Do you want to go? And I said, I wrote it back. This was when we actually wrote letters with pens and pencils and stuff. I wrote him back and said, of course I want to go. Where's Nepal? I had no idea. So I had to look it up on the world globe. It's the opposite side of the planet from Utah, which is symbolic and metaphoric. And so off we went, got on an airplane, and flew off to Nepal.
And you didn't just Google it either, because it wasn't there yet, was it?
No, this is 74. I had an actual solid world globe, and I looked it up and found it. Oh, there's Mount Everest. Oh, there's Nepal. And so I went there just for the adventure of it. But when I got there, I started feeling the spiritual opening. I didn't even know what that meant, because I'd slammed the door tight years and years before. But it just kept opening and kept opening. And I studied Eastern religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Zen, and those kind of things. Those didn't really make it either. I don't like any structured religion. None of those registered. But the sense of expansion was undeniable.
Mm.
And on my way back on the airplane, I spent about 5 months in India, Nepal, and the other side of the world. And then on the way back on the airplane, I said, I have to find this feeling. I don't even know what it is for sure, but I have to find this. and live with it, or else I'm going to have to move back and live in India and Nepal because I felt something there that I never felt before.
What do you attribute that to?
What was that?
What do you attribute that feeling that you?
That's an interesting question. I used to think, well, it's because my past and coming from Utah and then opening up, and what I now realize is that it's because of the future, the me that I am now and the future me, the spiritual me that I'm becoming, I had to have an opening, and Nepal seemed like a good way to do it.
Right.
It's because of the future that everything happens in our life. So I came back here.
But Ty, did you already know that then, or did you have to break into that awareness at that time?
Oh, I had no clue about anything then. I was a kid from Utah and Montana.
Oh, and were you riding tigers while you were in Nepal?
When we got there, the funding for the tiger study fell apart, so we both realized that the tiger study was just the excuse to get us out in the world. We weren't supposed to be there and actually hanging in the jungle and studying tigers and stuff.
It was all meant to be. You had a sense of it being directed at that point, did you?
Yes, I had a sense of it being so right, but I had no idea it was directed by the future. I wouldn't discover that for another 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, great.
So I came back to the United States, came back to Utah, didn't fit in Utah at all. I didn't fit there to begin with. And so I started traveling to California, and I just get on a plane, go to San Francisco, and walk around the streets wondering, how am I going to find this thing that I'm looking for? And ultimately, I was in Berkeley, and I met a guy who lived at the Living Love Center, which was one of those big communal living centers near the Berkeley campus. And I walked in there, and I said, oh, my God, I'm home. These people are spiritual. They're exploring. They're hugging. They're, like, touchy. They're interested in something more than just, and I said, okay, so I decided I had to move to California, so I moved and came to LA instead of San Francisco because I got involved in a film production company here. And
what were you
so
doing? What were you doing with it? Shooting the Nepalese experience or what?
Like I said, I was into motorcycles and cars and stuff like that. So I came out here with a friend and we started a production company working with stuntmen. and we'd take them, like we took one guy to
Houston. Are you an adventurer?
Totally. Totally. We took this guy to the Astrodome in Texas, and I went up with him to the top, which is like 30 stories above the ground, and I sprayed him with kerosene and lit him on fire, and then he jumped into a big pillow down there.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
So we'd film crazy things like that. You might remember the show. It's called Stunts Unlimited, and That's Incredible, and there were shows they were the first reality shows showing people doing crazy stuff. So we did that, and I wanted to do spiritual films, but I didn't fully know what spirituality was yet.
So
I love Richard Bach's, you know Richard Bach's book, Illusions?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
I love that story, and we actually met Richard. We tried to do that as a movie. The pieces didn't quite come together, but that was the reason that, again, the reason I got to California was I thought, oh, I'll get involved in this film stuff. But the real reason was to discover and be involved in metaphysics and spirituality 7 days a week.
Aha. So you're in films, you're doing stunts, and then you decide to do spiritual film.
Every evening and every weekend was going to workshops and doing therapy and healing and consciousness and meditation and all that stuff. I was a kid in a candy store.
Wow. Was it fun?
Oh, it was so much fun.
Great.
It was just unlimited fun. And ultimately, well, now it ultimately became my career. It was that compelling. And so I tried every form of therapy, every form of healing. I literally went back to India to do the guru thing several times. I traveled all over the country doing seminars, and because I was just fascinated by healing and energies. And I've got like hot hands. I do energy balancing healing stuff. And it was all really fun.
What kind of gurus did you go to? Can I ask you that?
Babaji and can't remember the other guy. And they all, you know, they all sort of are similar and sound the same. And it was nice. It was sweet. But it didn't rock my world. It didn't open me to what there was still something missing.
Okay. And what was it? Were you already aiming for? What, transformation, self-actualization, peace? What were you aiming for?
All of those. Mm-hmm. All, well, and it was interesting because one of the ways I describe it, we have a cabin in Montana, and I spent every summer of my life at our cabin. And it was very, when we first went there, there was no running water, no inside. We had an outhouse and a very primitive, wonderful living in the woods. And we also did a lot of water skiing there, where we were on a lake. And so my approach to life was living in a cabin. If something breaks, you have to fix it.
Right.
You don't try to rationalize it with a positive thinking, oh, well, it's meant to be this way. And so here I was in the middle of the metaphysical spiritual thing in California, but then I'd go back to the cabin where I grew up. And when I was young, if the water was smooth, it was time to go water skiing.
Okay.
And if there was something wrong with the boat, I didn't try to rationalize and say, well, God doesn't want me to go water skiing now because there's something better for... It was like, no, fix the damn boat and go water skiing. And so I brought that attitude with me when I came to the spiritual healing world.
Uh-huh.
And it was a weird conflict because everybody in the healing world was about allowing and don't be judgmental and it'll go with the flow. And I'd meet people who had been sick for years.
Hmm.
And I'd say, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm in a detox. I go, how long have you been in this cleansing? 6 years, seven years. And I'd go, are you kidding me? I said, there's something crazy about this. You can fix a computer, you can fix a boat, you should be able to, human beings are more amazing, excuse me, you should be able to really efficiently help people. And so all the spiritual and the healing stuff was about allow and go with the flow, and it would take years to create change.
Hmm.
And I was going, it just doesn't fit right with me. So I kept looking. I spent like 7-10 years studying all these different healings and then I met Lazarus.
Okay.
And it rocked my world.
And you met Lazarus when he began. You better tell everybody who Lazarus is, eh?
He's a channeled being, a non-physical entity, the most incredible, loving, powerful, wise being I've ever met in my life.
Isn't he a coalescence of beings?
He's actually, well, he refers to himself as a we because he said his consciousness is so big that to say I is just a
ludicrous
misnomer. It's
yeah,
not really accurate. So it's he's one entity, but a massive consciousness that has so many aspects. And he was so clear and so to the point, and he answered that quest that I said there should be a way to create change effectively,
right,
and rather quickly. And he said, you create your reality, and that was a radical idea. Back then it was almost 35 years ago. Now everyone knows you create your own reality. But back then, that was Seth wrote about it and Lazarus talked about it, but there weren't many people living that. They were all into love and it was still the hippies routine. And Lazarus said, you create everything in your reality, which means you're creating it right now, and then you're creating it right now, and then you're creating it right now, and then you can change it right now. And I was going, this is what I've been looking for. Now I got to figure out how to do that.
But hang on a sec, Ty. I just want to say something in defense of the 60s or the peace, love, dove thing.
Yes.
You can create a better reality when you can find peace inside and still the rabble in there of old reactions. Can you not? I mean, so maybe it was a wave of consciousness that was leading us somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. It was because the future guides our life. That was a phase on our journey into the future of becoming fully empowered,
okay,
becoming really creative, becoming healthy, happy, able to manifest what we want, whether it's health or happiness or love or success. And one of the dramatic trying to understand that we literally create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And Lazarus was just totally clear, matter of fact about it. He said, this is the truth. You can take it or leave it. Quantum physics proves it. You don't have to believe it, but your life will work better if you do. And then he said one other thing that just changed my whole life, literally gave me this career from one concept. And I've never heard any other teacher on the planet anywhere, and I've studied just about all of them. I've never heard any other teacher on the planet ever refer to this idea as clearly and directly as Lazarus did.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said in his very first seminar, in addition to you create your own reality, he said also, oh, this relates back to you, Veronica, and your interest in paradigm shifting.
Right, okay.
Lazarus said, this paradigm that Well, the first one, that we're victims of life and God creates our reality, and we believe that for a long time. So the paradigm shift there is to know you create your reality, and God is just applauding as you do it, or holding his wincing when you create a disaster. But so that first paradigm shift is huge, from being a victim to being the creator of your reality. The other paradigm shift that we are literally living in right now today, and have been for particularly for the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years, around 2012, that paradigm shift is, and Lazara said, the future creates the present.
Okay.
I literally was sitting there and I got dizzy. It's a good thing I was sitting down, I would have fallen over.
Wow.
The future creates the present. And I said, oh my God, he just turned, because I came from Utah, and Mormons particularly, they have the largest genealogical library that exists on the planet Earth. So they are so into the past that they go back and follow generations and generations and generations. And every time you meet somebody in Utah, they say, oh, what family are you from? Who was your grandfather? Where did you come? So it's all about the past. And I'd grown up with that. Then Lazara says, the past is just a story. It means virtually nothing. It's all about the future creating the present. I got dizzy. I said, oh my God, he just turned my whole world upside down. And then I listened to him talk about it a little more, and I thought about it, and then I realized, no, he didn't turn my world right upside down.
He turned it right side up.
for the first time ever, I now get how reality works.
Well, did you actually have private sessions with him?
Every month for like 10 years.
Wow.
It was awesome. That was because he was brand new. Nobody knew about it. Now he doesn't even do that anymore. It hasn't for many, many years.
I know. I envy that some of you really got to do a lot of that. I'd like to have done that.
It was awesome. Every month, I got to pick up the phone just like this, pick up the phone, talk to him for an hour, and I wasted so much time. I said, oh, if I could have that time back now. I wasted so much time being a martyr and being a victim and struggling and not getting the point. And he would very patiently just point, well, have you looked at your self-pity? Have you looked at the reason why you're choosing to struggle? I go, well, yeah, sort of. And then the next month, well, have you looked at why you're choosing to struggle?
But tell me this, Ty. Isn't it hard for people to become conscious of that? I mean, like, for example, the victim, right? And we talked on the phone yesterday, and I'm saying, well, my gosh, given an astrology chart, perhaps we chose it and all of that, but it can make you feel victimized because you feel kind of laid down as a, like there's a map here. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's really
Absolutely.
Difficult for people to find the moving parts in that.
It's everything in our world teaches us that we are victims.
Right.
Our parents and our life experience when we're born is we're victims of our parents because they are always screwed up. No, I never met anybody who came from a functional family. So that's a problem. Then you get into teachers and school and people there are struggling. Then you get indoctrinated into religions, which are all about suffering and God's punishing us, or else he's giving us problems to teach us lessons. So our whole world is based on being a victim.
But wait, one of the reasons I brought that up from my perspective is that sometimes people get shut down because of the lack of compassion in discovering that sort of thing. People take it as a judgment and feel blunted. And I'm like, we need to really look at that too, because you can't pry people off the rock if you don't tickle them a little bit.
And I've dealt with that with every single client. I've been doing this future visioning stuff for full time for over 20 years now.
Okay.
And studying, well, it was 35 years ago when I started studying consciousness, and then about 1979 or 80, I met Lazarus and started really studying that. And so every single client, that issue of how do you tell someone if they've got a serious problem, which most people do in one form or another, whether it's a terrible disease or a problem in their relationship or a struggle in their finances or all of the above.
Or just having had a lot of abuse and trying to fight your way out of a wet paper bag, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, lots of abuse, both conscious knowing abuse and just the abuse of, like, the abuse that comes from religions, teaching us that we're victims and God is controlling our lives. That's like spiritual abuse, but nobody really recognizes it.
Or the fear-based friendships that keep you locked into stuff. That's kind of an abuse, which we don't call abuse, but yeah.
And it goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So with every client, I've had to address that issue. And with myself. So like 5 years or so after I met Lazarus, I went on a skiing vacation to Utah, because that's where I was born. So I went there snow skiing, and my stomach started to hurt, like badly. So I said, okay, well, there's something wrong. It must have been something I ate. I better go to bed and sleep it off. So I went to bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night in excruciating pain.
Hmm.
I literally woke up sobbing. I was in so much pain. So I spent the next 10 or 12 or 15 or 20 hours trying to heal this horrible pain. And I had studied, like I said, I studied everything. I studied healing. I prayed. I did visualizations. I did the Pac-Man visualization thing. I did breathing techniques. I did everything in the world to try to heal myself, and nothing worked at all. Zip, zero, none. I failed completely. Wound up going to the emergency room, and three doctors there poking and prodding, and they said, your appendix may have already exploded, and we have to do emergency surgery like we should have done it yesterday. And they're wheeling me towards the operating room, and they said, if we don't do this like right now, you're going to die. That's just like, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your choice, surgery or die. And I said, no, I'm not having surgery. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I look back at myself and say, oh, my God, I was a newbie then. And I was still crazy enough to say, I said, no, I'm going to heal this or die trying. I'm going to figure this out. I'm drawing a line in the sand. I know intellectually, only intellectually, I know that I create my reality. I'm obviously not doing a very good job of that because I'm dying. But I know that that's true. So I don't know what I'm going to do, but, and the doctor, who was a woman, she was actually really cool. She said, here, sign this release form. I said, no problem. I'm not trying to sue the hospital. I'm trying to go skiing. And so as we were headed down the hall, I couldn't even get out of the wheelchair to walk to the car, which was only 10 feet from the emergency room door. As we're headed down the hallway, my mom is there. She's pushing my wheelchair, which is not an inconsequential detail. And we went by a bank of payphones. Because it was way back, this was like 30, 28 years ago. We didn't have cell phones then. So I said, Mom, push me over to the phones. And I picked up the phone and I called Concept Synergy because I was talking to Lazarus every month. So I called and I got Gerald, who worked in the office, and I said, Gerald, I'm in bad shape. I already look like I'm dead. They say I'm going to die, and I need to talk to Lazarus. I'm in desperate, bad shape. And Gerald said, oh, God, Ty, I'm sorry. Jack is on an airplane, and there's no way in the world we can reach him. And he won't even land for hours. I said, I could be dead by then. This is not good. And my hopes just crashed through the floor. I just said, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
And this is before they had Wi-Fi on the plane.
This was 28 years ago.
Yeah.
None of that was available.
Right.
So I said, oh, my God, Gerald, I don't know what to do. And Gerald, bless his heart, he said, I can't tell you what Lazarus would tell you, but I can tell you that what we've seen with people around our Lazarus and the community and the company, and people who have had inflamed gut issues have always had problems with unresolved anger.
Okay, good.
The light went off. I knew exactly what it was. I said, oh, my God, thanks, Gerald. Thank you, buddy. Hung up the phone, turned to my mom, who's pushing my wheelchair. I said, Mom, I have to talk with you. She said, okay, because she's watching. I have two sisters, but I'm her only son. She's watching her only son die. So what's she going to say? No? She said, no. She says, okay. So we go up to the room. Damn near kills me just moving from the wheelchair into the bed. Mom walks in, and I said, Mom, I have to talk to you about some old anger about our cabin in Montana and about that I had found it and fixed it up, and she paid for it, and I thought we were partners. And then she said one day, no, we're not partners. It's my cabin. You do it my way. And so I was hurt and angry. And that had happened 5 years before. So as I'm talking to her and telling her how angry, how hopeless, how powerless, how betrayed I feel, then I stop in the middle of the sentence and go, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this picture. What's wrong here? I was completely healed.
Wow.
100%.
You're kidding. You mean like, just because you expressed it, but probably key to the person that you were angry about, right?
Well, it's because I expressed it, and what's interesting is nothing changed. She didn't say, oh, okay, I see it now. Yeah, okay, we'll be partners. I'll give you a half ownership. And we didn't change the situation at all. It's just I got the anger, and we still, to this day, right? We have, she she doesn't know, she doesn't feel like we ever had a partnership agreement because it was verbal, which is why I recommend to people write things down.
Right.
She said we didn't have an agreement. It was she bought the cabin and I was a participant, but she doesn't feel like she betrayed me, but I felt betrayed.
Okay.
And by expressing that, the anger and the hurt and the betrayal and the hopelessness and the helplessness, instantaneously.
But Ty, that means that you did not have to get to the root of why that betrayed, why you felt so betrayed at a very deep level.
Well, that's an ongoing, it's very cool that you asked that question. No one's ever gone that step. Well, yay for you, Veronica. That's very cool.
Thank you.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, because it also is elevating for us to know you don't have to get to the entire thing, do you?
Well, in order to ultimately heal, yes, you do.
Okay, but you didn't that day, right? So you
did. I didn't that day. That was enough, because that was enough to realize, oh, my God, you do create your own reality, and you can literally create miracles. So I've helped people heal every illness from cancer to chronic fatigue to fibromyalgia to every illness known to man. I've helped people heal it, and sometimes instantaneously, just the way I did. Sometimes they have to go through a process because there are layers of things that they need to learn. But so I've been there. I've been to the edge of death. I know how to create reality changes, and particularly with healing. But your question is so profound, because what I discovered in ongoing work with the future visioning process, where the first step of future visioning is connect to the future and see what you want.
Okay.
That's the beginning of every process, whether you're traveling, whether you're starting a business, whether you're getting married, you see the future of living together and being happy and raising a family or whatever. Everything.
So what's the time frame? You do it like 30 years hence or 1 year? What do you do?
Well, what I discovered in working with the future, which I've been doing for 33 years since Lazarus said, the future creates the... Mm-hmm. Then I started, like you did yesterday. It was so cool. I was so thrilled when you said, we talk about this, and you got the concept, and then you went and talked to one of your clients. And what did you see happen when you started to talk to your client who was kind of stuck?
She just suddenly released. It took me a few times of really rallying her, saying, no, what do you want to see from the future?
Yes.
It took me, I had to keep sort of tickling her or poking her or something. And all of a sudden she went, wow, well, that's up to me. I go, uh-huh.
Yes.
And she just opened, her fields opened broadly. And, you know, I've been working with her daily because she's in a crisis. So.
Oh, right.
Ah.
Right. So you saw the change. Were you with her in person?
No. Mm-mm. She's in Montana, ironically.
Oh, interesting. Cool. But you could hear the opening, the freedom, the hope. Hope literally is a derivative of our relationship with the future.
Well, and also it's empowerment, isn't it? So instead of being victimized, she's going, oh, I can create that, right?
Well, empowerment is a process and a, if you look at the future and do not feel empowered and do not feel that you can create that future, then visioning, which is why a lot of people like now with New Year's resolutions or a lot of the visualization stuff that goes on in the spiritual world, if you see the future that you want, which we do, our brain does that whether we like it or not, mm-hmm. which is why you can't just live in the moment. We're always thinking about, oh, I'd love to have a nice house with a view. I'd love to travel to whatever, India or Indonesia. We're always thinking about future possibilities.
Right.
If you see the future but you don't think you can get there, that is the biggest source of frustration and pain and suffering and hopelessness and then disease in the world.
But
if
the thing is,
the future,
go ahead.
So your comment about empowerment, seeing the future, and then that's what I was working on back then when Lazarus said, you create your own reality. I said, okay, I want to be healthy. I want to go skiing. I don't want to have surgery. But I don't know how to really own the empowerment to create the future that I want. And then I realized how powerful emotions are. You have to be honest with your emotions, and that's a huge important component of creating the future that you want, whether it's 5 seconds from now healing an illness or 15 years from now or 20 years from now creating a happy, healthy life and successful future.
Well, it's funny because if you're going to be honest with your emotions, a lot of us are really debilitated by wanting to present nicely.
That is the disaster of positive thinking.
Isn't that interesting, huh?
It has hurt my experience working with thousands of clients and doing this for 40 years now altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Positive thinking has hurt far more people than it has helped.
Yeah, but you know, I have to say, in her defense, I go back to Mary Baker Eddy of Christian Science. She did a lot of going in there and really digging through all the feelings and thoughts that she had in order to heal. She did a lot of major healing that way.
That's right.
So it's not just metaphysics, it's how we've interpreted it and how we've clutched something that is a fast fix, right?
And that everyone who has done the work gets results. But unfortunately, what gets sold is just the surface. Positive thinking, put on a smile and everything in your life is supposed to work.
Right.
Put on a positive attitude and your cancer is supposed to go away.
Right.
It doesn't work that way, which is why I don't teach positive thinking, because it's in the core of a lot of teachings. If you look deep enough, you can find some of the real, deep, important work. But they get distilled. Oh, here's another that I don't usually talk about this in the first conversation, but here's one that you particularly would enjoy.
Okay.
And your audience, this is an advanced level, but it's so profound. Another gift from Lazarus. He said, if you look for simple answers, you guarantee yourself a difficult life.
I love that. That's wonderful.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That changes the whole game. Like 80 to 90% of the personal growth and the spiritual books and the positive thinking and stuff go out the window with that one concept, because they all say, oh, here's a simple thought that's going to change your life. Just have a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never worked for anyone, because it's simplified down to the point where it has no power. What you said, you look, yes, you're positive, but then you do, like Mary Baker Eddy, you then have to do the, like I had to go in and find the depth of my rage and my hate and my hopelessness and my powerlessness. In order to be positive, I had to do that deep emotional exploration.
So we have to see and feel and know our victim, our poor me,
yep,
our rage, right?
Yep.
Hmm.
And when you follow that deeply enough, and this goes back to your question, your comment earlier also, where is the real core of the rage in life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're frustrated because our parents obviously weren't perfect. No one's ever were. So we're angry at our parents, mm-hmm. and psychology goes that far.
Mm-hmm.
Then metaphysics and spirituality goes, okay, so forgive them. They did the best they could, blah, 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 which is not true either. They didn't do the best they could. The best they could was be the spiritual being and be incredible, awesome parents. That would be the best they could do. They were human, and they were... And they were less than perfect, so they did a less than perfect job. So we're angry at our parents. Psychology goes into that a little bit. And spirituality comes on and says, you should forgive that. Now you should be healthy and happy, and you're not.
But aren't we mad at God?
Yeah. Hugely.
Yeah,
not
think so.
Mad, furious, enraged.
Yeah.
And that's so cool that you say that. Very few people on the planet even have conceptualized that, much less say it out loud. Yay for you. How do you know that?
Well, I've been on my path for a long time too, eh?
Well, but it's not about length, because I've met thousands of people who've been on their path forever, and they have no clue that they're angry at God. So you uniquely, this is something cool about you.
Oh, good.
Not about the long spiritual path. The long spiritual path has led a lot of people into a brick wall. How do you know that, and so much so that you'll like literally just blurt it out in public and say, oh, aren't we angry at God? Most people won't say that. They're afraid of lightning bolts.
Well, you know that I probably told you this, but when I was little, I was Catholic, and the nuns kind of beat on us, and my mom beat on us, and I used to go outside and say to God, you really hire some stupid people. But, and I was very small and very articulate, but I knew, and this is true for everybody, so I'm sure you're going to address this part, but I knew deep in my soul journey that I loved God, but I used to shake my head and go, you know, God, you're kind of messed up here.
Yes.
And so I think a lot of us have that, don't you think?
Every human being on the planet Earth is angry at God.
And so we should be, because he's been badly, badly represented.
And if the stories are true, what he did to everyone from Job to you as a child to the people in the Middle East to all the kids that he gives cancer to every day, if that was true about God, he is hate worthy.
Yeah, really.
We should hate somebody who does that to children, to women, to the planet itself. I'm going to kill everyone because you kind of screwed up, so I'm going to wipe you all out. And if that was true about God, he's a hateful, a hate-filled being and worthy of being hated.
Well, this is interesting because this is paradigm shifting, which you mentioned.
Totally.
We keep referring to it from the beginning of the show because it's really relevant that the actual belief and understanding of God has to be shifted. And that's what you're telling us about, right?
Particularly in the future, where our ultimate future is going home to God and to the goddess.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that quote, Teilhard de Chardin, who said, we are spiritual beings. That means we came from spirit. We came from God. So the ultimate future of our whole spiritual journey is to go home to God.
Mm-hmm.
If you hate the very... It's like going home to your abusive father.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most people are trying to do. They want to go home to their father who beat them and was cruel and because they've been taught that God is this mean, cruel, punishing being, and they're spiritually, and that the conflict in that literally makes people sick. It kills people.
Mm-hmm.
So connecting to God, and like you said, inside you there's a place that knows because you came from God.
Mm-hmm.
And even deeper than that, okay, so here's this will be a huge step for you.
But yeah,
so
go ahead.
There's a peace where you're angry at God.
Mm-hmm.
What is the nature of your relationship with the goddess?
I don't trust women.
Right. Where was she when God was screwing you over and putting you here in an abusive family and in a Catholic school where you got beaten by his employees, the nuns? Where was the goddess when all that pain was going on?
I think she'd been retired.
And so how do you feel about her for bailing when you needed her the most?
This first word that comes up, Ty, is untrusting.
Yes.
You know.
You've manifested that how many times with women in your life?
Probably about thousands.
Yes, give or take. Literally.
But you know, what's really interesting is this is literally a huge, you're saying, and I know we haven't got to the futurizing part yet, but you're making my head go into a totally different comprehension of what any of that means. And it has to hit my belly. It has to be way down in the subconscious. I can feel it changing.
Yes, yes. And it starts, and yay for you. You are a sharp knife in the drawer. Even the questions and the insight behind the question, and it's a beautiful thing that sadly a lot of people diminish the value of the mind, say, oh, that's just your mind. No, a mind is an incredible gift,
right.
And it starts there. It's like, I understood, I create my own reality, but then it took like 5 years later when I was in the hospital, I said, okay, now I understand that intellectually, but I need to figure out how to get that into my guts, and that meant going into my emotions. And then, poof, instantaneously, I was healed.
Hey, isn't that great? You said, I have to figure out how to get that into my gut, and that's where you got sick.
Exactly.
Isn't that interesting?
It's all a beautiful metaphor. This whole thing is a movie.
Uh-huh.
And every little thing has a metaphorical meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you were saying there, and recognizing, okay, I'm angry at God, and have this, and the goddess just seems to have abandoned me. What was the experience I created with my mother? Betrayal.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we do that.
Uh-huh.
It's not about even our mother. It's about our relationship with the goddess.
Okay.
Which is why the whole future visioning process, the beginning is go to the future that you really want. Then, to heal the things that are in the way of having that, you have to go deal with your emotions. You have to deal with your beliefs about I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough. And very quickly, which you're already going faster than most people, already into the real core issue, which is I'm angry at God and enraged at the goddess.
Good.
And if the ultimate future is going home to God and the goddess, and you hate their guts,
mm-hmm.
What's going to happen in your future?
Probably a lot of bankruptcy or something, you know, some
mental, emotional, financial, and as you said, a lot of relationships where betrayal just comes out of nowhere because that's your model for the core of love.
And it's funny, I don't know if I mentioned this to you yesterday, but I had this really deep feeling of having a program of being highly rejectable in me. And I'm smart enough to know I want to deal with it. Why don't you do a process with us? Because these are not just about me or you. These are really deep processes for people, are they not? These are deep issues.
Every human being on the planet. One other quote from Lazarus, and then let's do a process. And I'm thrilled. This is so much fun, more fun than I thought. I always have fun when I'm doing this, but it's more fun because of your honesty, your openness, and your perception.
Thank you. I'm having a blast, so I'm not letting you go too easily.
Yeah, thank you. It's really, and this can change your whole life because you're so ready. It starts with an understanding, and that does create, like with your client that you were talking to, just understanding the future can change your whole life. Then you still have to go in and do the work, but it's not like, okay, let's go through a 15-year detox process. This can happen, like it took me 13 years to figure this stuff out about my relationship with my anger with God and to find the anger. So then one of the quotes that Lazarus shared that just, again, rocked my world and took me years to understand and to grok in my stomach. He said, and this is the very first seminar when he's talking about the future, the significance, where we come from, the spiritual path, we create our own reality. And then he said, talking about God and the goddess, he explained that we all feel like she like just left the room somewhere while God was punishing us. And he said,
she was getting her nails done.
Exactly. Exactly. Like one of my clients was just pissed, just furious. She said, I'm so angry at her. And I said, well, so where was the God? Or I'm so angry at him. And I said, so where was the goddess while God was testing you and torturing you and giving you these diseases that are teaching you these spiritual lessons and all this bullshit? She said, I'm so angry. And I said, where was the goddess? She said, yeah, where the hell was she? Out shopping?
I love it.
And her illness healed right that day because she was honest with her rage, and we changed that. So, but the perception is we were abandoned, so rage is a normal, healthy, sane feeling. So Lazarus said in the very first workshop, he said, every woman has rage at the goddess.
Yay! Thank you, Lazarus. You know what's occurring to me, Ty, as we talk like this? I'm going, when you get into the future vision, it's almost like you've partially pried these deep old feelings up. I called it prying them off the rock. But you know what I'm saying? It's like something's coming up, even just with the idea that you could choose it from the future.
That's one of the things I discovered, because I had spent all those years studying healing and consciousness and psychology and gestalt stuff and all of that stuff. And it helped, and it moved things along a little bit, but you had to kind of go in and dig to find this issue or this resistance or this belief system. What I saw when I started talking with people about the future is the resistances popped up instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a technique where I can read someone and know their major issues in less than 0.2 seconds.
Woo! Well, I love this because a lot of us here listening to this show are super dedicated to getting out of these incredible wheel, whatever they are. So let's do a process. We have only 10 minutes left, but we'll get you back on for sure if you're willing.
Great. Yeah. Okay, so what we're going to do is the first step of every process is to decide where you want to go.
Okay.
Like when you travel, you start looking at the brochures, you think about where in the world have I been, where do I want to go. The first step is, where do I want to go? So that choosing the future is a uniquely human. Animals can't do it. Robots can't do it. We can. We have choice. We can imagine and we can choose. So choosing the future is the first step of every process. And then the power of the future affects us every single moment more powerfully. That's why I work with the future so much. And yes, I go and heal the stuff in the past, but all that focus on the past is very ineffective if you don't change the future. What I discovered, it was all the healing techniques that I tried and I learned, and I was a vigorous, engaged student. What I found out was, if you're not working with your future consciously, everything else you do is equivalent to rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Okay.
If you don't change the future, all the meditation and the spiritual stuff and the affirmations and the positive thinking and all those things, the gestalt therapy, you know, if you don't change your future, you might feel better for a day, a week, a month. But if your future, like you said, if you have this I am rejectable, which means I'm going to be rejected, if you have that as your future, It doesn't matter what you do. You could meet the most perfect partner and the most perfect business partner or life partner in the world, and within 6 months, 8 months, that future where you get rejected is going to happen, and you're going to be even angrier than you are now.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding the influence of the future, this exercise is called the Dark Road, Light Road exercise.
Okay.
And I asked you yesterday if you would be the participant and answer for the people who
the
are listening.
The G-Pig.
Right. So what I'm going to do is just have you do a very easy, simple visualization and then ask you how you feel.
Okay.
And there are two of them, dark road and light road. So we'll start with the dark road. So close your eyes.
I am.
And all of you in listening land can do this also. It's real fun and easy, and it can literally change your whole life. This one exercise can change your entire life from now on forever, for the rest of this life and beyond this life. So you're driving on a dark road, and it's kind of foggy, and you can't see very well. And you don't know where you're going. It's windy. Now, notice, Veronica, how do you feel?
Two things. One is I'm looking forward, and I've got a lot of trepidation in my gut.
Yes. And what's happening in your neck and shoulders?
They're tense. My throat is tense.
And if you had to stay on this road for, say, 6 hours, how would you feel?
I'd be tired and kind of harassed.
If you had to stay on this road for 6 months, how would you feel?
Depressed, probably.
6 years, how would you feel?
I'd probably be ready to check out.
Literally, this is where suicide comes from.
Yeah.
And I've been there. I walked up to the edge of suicide many years ago in the midst of my horrible divorce and my life falling apart. Before I started doing this, before I understood this, I just said, I don't want to be here anymore. What if you had to spend the rest of your life on this dark road?
No. Well, the rest of my life would be truncated rapidly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just get me out of here.
Yeah.
Which is why drug use, legal or illegal, and suicide and all those things are sane choices.
Yeah, they are. I know.
Who would want to stay around for 50, 60, 70 years a bad road?
Well, and you look at all the people with dead eyes that are hanging out for a long time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's worse to be here and be dead than to get it over with and at least change the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
So now notice, while you're on this dark road and your muscles are tense, your guts are kind of tight and there's pain there, how long would it take for you to start getting sick with chronic fatigue syndrome or headaches or backaches or intestinal things?
Not long.
And now notice this one. This will be so instructive for you and all the people who are your audience who are seekers, who have tried all of these things. If someone was there with you and they said, oh, we'll just have a positive attitude, what would you feel?
Cynical, really cynical.
What if they said, oh, you just need to meditate more?
Yeah, well, I'm doing that. So I glaze over, actually. Like I told
yeah.
you, I get so many things in the mail, and I go, yeah, right, that old stuff.
That's right. And if you're on this dark road, if you're riding on the Titanic, if you're on this dark road, none of those things can work.
Right.
They can't make any difference. Like,
you're already focused on it not, that your future is not going to be any different anyway. Is that right?
That's right.
That's the choice.
And it doesn't matter how many vitamins you take, how you adjust your hormone levels. This happens for women, and all the hormonal stuff that goes with PMS or with menopause has nothing to do with what you eat or the hormone levels. It has to do with where you're headed and the hopelessness of that. So now, just really feel that on this dark road, now, because you are a caring, loving person,
right?
And literally you've now made part of your life communicating things to make a difference for people in the world. You care about the world that much.
I do.
As you think about it, like you mentioned those people with the dead eyes, how many people in the world around you are on this dark road?
Probably 80%, 85%.
Yeah. I found it to be over 90.
I was trying to be Pollyanna here.
Yes. Yes. Literally, most of the world.
Yeah.
And if it's personally, oh, it's going to be the economy, is or my job or my husband, I'm never going to find love. Or if it's the world, oh, it's the North Koreans and their nukes or the global warming. Oh, my God, it's going to destroy us. And mothers are in excruciating pain because their children are growing up in this future on this dark road.
Yeah, exactly.
It's devastating.
I know.
So now.
And no wonder
really,
people are so cruel to each other. No wonder.
Exactly. Because okay. How angry are you?
Very, yeah.
How angry are you at God and the goddess if this is your life. And this is God put you here to drive on a dark road for 50, 60, 70 years, and your children are going to get the same, or if not worse. How angry are you at God?
Very.
And how enraged are you with the goddess who's supposed to care?
You know, I want to splutter and go.
Exactly. And venting that rage on the goddess is the core of the future visioning process.
Okay, good.
And when you do, when you go in and you take out that rage on God and the goddess and you just obliterate them or torture them or make them ugly or do whatever you need to do to vent it, instantaneous healings happen.
All right, I'm up for that.
So now, take a deep breath. Good. Now gently open your eyes and look around and notice how that the tension and the heaviness clings to you.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how familiar that is.
Yeah.
Now, this time when you close your eyes, you're on a bright, wide open road. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Beautiful drive. The scenery around you is spectacular. There's beauty everywhere. There's almost no traffic. You can travel as fast as you want.
And I'm singing along.
Yes. And as you look out in the front towards the horizon, you can see there's a glow. And you know that your awesome future, where your dreams come true, is out there just over the horizon, waiting for you. Now, how do you feel?
Very excited. Optimistic.
What happens in your neck and shoulders?
It's soft. You know what I feel the most of? I feel relieved. I knew it could happen.
Yes. We've been looking for this for lifetimes.
Yeah.
That's the paradigm shift. 2012 was not about the Mayan calendar or any of that stuff. 2012 was the whole world is now shifting from the past controls us to the future creates us.
And we get to
choose the future.
Wow.
Lazarus was like 30 years ahead of the change, and he started talking about this in 1979.
But it takes a while to set it into the consciousness, I think. Cancel that.
Well, and the world was not ready to shift, to make the paradigm shift.
Right.
2012, the world shifted, but most people still haven't.
Right. So but that's a choice. We have to make that choice, don't we?
Exactly. And you're making it right now today. You just made it. That's why you feel relieved.
Woohoo!
You made it yesterday when we were talking, and you got the significance of the future and said, okay, I'm going to start talking with my client about this. And lo and behold, your client changed.
Well, tell me this, Ty. Do you think we should write it up, or do you think we can just keep future holding the vision forward?
It's all of the above.
Okay.
You see it, you feel it, you write about it. So now you're on this bright road, right?
Right.
Now, if you had to spend 6 hours on this road and then get to this awesome destination, and then the next destination is even more fun and bigger and better and brighter, now how do you feel if you had to spend 6 hours on this road?
Oh, I'm quite happy, actually.
6 months on this road?
I don't want to be 6 months before I can get to the future.
No. You get to the destination, it's just over the hill, just over the horizon, and then you go to another one, and another one, and another one. They're awesome destinations.
Oh, I can see living forever, heaven on earth, you know.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. That's what life is supposed to be for a spiritual being.
Mm.
That's what your destiny is. That's what you deserve.
I love it.
We forgot that. We're supposed
to have
fun.
But we have had that angst of knowing there's something that we've forgotten, right?
We've had that for thousands of lifetimes.
Yeah.
And that's why the paradigm shift is so huge. This lifetime. This is the only period of human existence on any dimension that Lazarus has come to the human plane. This is the only time. He said that's not an ego thing. He said from his levels of consciousness, those beings do things efficiently. They don't send 5 people or 10 people to do a one-man job.
Right.
So Lazarus is the only one who has ever or will ever, from his levels of consciousness, come here and talk to the earth. And this is the only time he's going to be here because he's coming, giving us the information. It'll then be available forever for all dimensions of human consciousness. And so this paradigm shift, which is like your paradigm shifting concept that you've been hungry for, that you've been exploring, that you've been literally made your show about, the biggest paradigm shift, the two biggest paradigm shifts in the world are first back in the 70s realizing that we create our own reality. We're not actually victims. We are the creators. That's a huge paradigm shift. Then the second one, which is the future is ours to choose, and the future then creates our reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third paradigm shift that you jumped into, and normally oftentimes I don't even talk about that in the first call because it's like such a stretch, but you jumped right in there. The third paradigm shift is realizing I've been angry at God and enraged at the goddess for virtually every lifetime that is in this context of the issues I'm learning this, and I need to heal that so that I can be in love with God and loved by God and the goddess, and then this beautiful future, the adventure that this life is supposed to be, can happen almost spontaneously, almost automatically.
That is wonderful.
How does that feel in your heart?
It feels just great, and what I'm feeling is this incredible, it's like God is shifting into creator spirit, infusing all kinds of things, and so is the goddess, and there's dancing and singing. I'm like, wow, this is, talk about a movie.
Yes.
I'm loving it. You're just lifting me so far beyond my life experience, you know?
And the shifts happened so quickly. When Lazarus talked about the anger at God and the goddess, I totally understood it. But it took me 10 years to really find my anger at God. And then it took me 2 or 3 more years to find my anger at the goddess.
Wonderful.
And when I did, it was like such a huge change. And so this whole process of futuring is intricate. It's profound. I've helped thousands of people heal
But wait a minute. Because you've helped thousands of people, doesn't that mean that some of us can take it on much faster than you did?
Absolutely.
Good. I want that.
Like, literally, it took me 13 years to find my anger at the goddess.
Okay.
And feel it and vent it. And most of the time, well, like you and I have started working on that in this very first conversation. We're not even doing a session. We're just having a conversation. And you're already getting it, sensing it, seeing it, feeling it, because the path has been made. And with my clients in our first session, that's usually 3 or 4 hours, it took me 13 years. Usually in that first session, 3 or 4 hours, we get in, go in and feel the rage at the goddess and express it and release it. And illnesses disappear, like right in front of my eyes.
Wow, I love that. Well, we have to unfortunately end, but I want to say to everyone, happy, happy new year. I hope this is helping you just absolutely open to the amazing, amazing future you have. And for you, I really want you, Ty, to know how much we appreciate you, and also tell everybody how to get hold of you.
Oh, yes, for sure. My website is futurevisioning.com.
Okay.
My email is ti@futurevisioning.com.
Tie up and your future. Tie
that's right.
into your future.
That's right. Tie yourself to a shooting star.
Yeah.
And a phone number, 818-995-1331. And what I do with people is generally like a 30-minute free future visioning experience where we do kind of touch on this, see where the major blockages are, go out and actually meet the future self, and then look at there's a whole program, and I'm also training people now to do future visioning. I've got a couple of apprentices that have studied with me for several years now, and they're creating magic and miracles in their own lives and in their clients' lives. So if you are a practitioner, and like you said, Veronica, you just started just a little bit of this with a client yesterday and had a significant, noticeable, palpable breakthrough.
Right.
That's what happens with every single client. So if you want to learn how to do this, I love now teaching people to do it. And let me give you one more gift, Veronica, and the audience. Close your eyes again.
Okay.
Look out into the future.
Okay.
And look way out to the end of this lifetime when you are 80, 90, 100 years old. And you're totally happy, totally healthy, completely empowered.
Shimmering.
Successful. What?
Shimmering.
Shimmering, yes. Almost becoming the light being, but still human, so you can enjoy it here in this plane. And that future self is empowered. She knows who she really is. She's more the real you than you are. She's more the spiritual being. And notice, what's her smile like?
Huge, huge. She's laughing. She's very funny anyway.
Yes. How much does she love you?
A lot. Just so much. Makes me get teary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Feel that.
Yeah.
Feel those tears and let those guide the rest of your life. and beyond, because when you look at her future, she's excited about you. She's also excited about her future, because her future is going home to dance with God and the goddess forever,
whom she loves.
And that ultimate future, being loved, both loving God and the goddess and being loved by God and the goddess, that is her future, which means that's your future.
That's all right with me. I'm in it. Thank you.
If you let that future touch you and guide you every day, what might happen?
Wow. It's infinite. It's just wonderful. It's love.
Yes. Yes. Now bring yourself back here and open your eyes.
Okay.
And notice this, because you're a quick study. Notice this. With your eyes open, you can still see and sense your future self. What is she doing right now while you're here and your eyes are open and you're in the present?
She's just smiling at me.
Yes. Notice she's there even when you're like involved in your day and on the phone and in traffic and doing conversations and sessions with people. And if you really feel this, you realize, oh, how present in the moment are you right now?
Well, a lot, very.
Yes, totally. That's what I spent 10 years trying to be in the moment with Ram Dass and back in the 70s, and it just never quite worked. And then I discovered the future and realized, oh, you don't get into the present by just being present. You work on your future so that you can relax, and then being in the present is natural.
Oh, this is such wonderful. I'm so grateful you came on, especially
Me
New
too.
Year's. We're going to have many, many New Year's, and you just got it time release. Talk about
yes.
Groundhog Day. Going
yes.
the other
so the
way
New
around.
Year's, the New Year's suggestion for all those people listening, even if they do it after New Year's, go write about your awesome future self at the end of this life. Instead of doing New Year's resolutions, write your eulogy. Write your obituary, write your end-of-life story, and get connected to that future, because then your New Year's resolutions, which most of the time fail, because you're on the Titanic, if you connect with your awesome future self, and you know that your ultimate future is going to be awesome, then you come back and you can do New Year's resolutions and lose the weight, or get organized, or feel better, or resolve that relationship issue, or make more money, or whatever. But if you change the future first, then the short-term goals can actually happen. So for all those people who listen to this near New Year's, any New Year, work with your long-range future first. And you particularly, Veronica, you asked earlier, write about that wise old future self.
Yes.
Think about her. See her. Feel her. Breathe her. Feel. Let yourself tear up. She will change your life.
Yay! Well, thank you again. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thank you so much, Ty.
Thank you, Veronica.
Ty Kane. That's your last name, isn't it?
Yes, C-A-I-N-E.
Future visioning. I'll meet you out there in the future.
Yes, yes.
Take care. Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks, Veronica.
Bye.
Bye.